If you haven't been around here for the last 6 weeks, the series in the church, or the time in the church that we call Lent, that began in Ash Wednesday and ended on Friday with Good Friday, then you wouldn't know. And so I'm telling you that we've been in a series called Life in the Shadowlands. And we've talked about how there's a reality in our life, that there's darkness in our world, and there are shadows that obscure. Shadows like fear and sin and deception and death that make it difficult sometimes to have hope, to see God at work, or to believe in Jesus. But we've also talked about, for those who know Jesus, the light of Christ is always there, peeking through the shadows and always stronger than the dark. So the idea of this Shadowlands was borrowed from one of children's literature greats, C.S. Lewis. And the very last chapter of the very last book in the Chronicles of Narnia series is called Farewell to Shadowlands. It's this beautiful end to a compelling story that is 7 books long. And the stories draw the reader into Lewis's imagined land called Narnia. And in Narnia, there are a few people from our world that get to be transported to Narnia by magic, and they discover a world of adventure. Some of them become kings and queens. Some of them rescue lost princes. There's an escape from giants. They make new friends. They defeat enemies and more. And readers of all ages can find themselves in the stories, can find someone to identify with as the characters have adventures in Narnia. But the stories are more than stories. C.S. Lewis, who became a Christian in his adult life, wove his own theology into these children's books. He writes, and when you read, you can find out what he thinks that God is like, or why the world is like it is, and why we can have hope. Go read them. If you haven't read them yet, read them. If you think you're too old, you're not. Go read them again and see what you can find. But these chronicles are parables. They are written allegorically. And in them, the key figure in every one of the books is Aslan the lion. And Aslan represents Jesus. So in these stories, Aslan is the creator of Narnia, who sings the whole world into being. Aslan is a lion, then we find that he is not tame, but he is good. Aslan is the one who gives his life, taking on the punishment of death for another. Aslan returns to life because his power is greater than any evil that tries to stand against him. And Aslan calls people from Narnia and our world to discover a life of purpose and meaning and to find a home with him. So the last book, aptly titled The Last Battle, is like this. In the book, we find this young king of Narnia, King Tyrion, engaged in a battle with the enemies of Narnia. And he's joined by an army of magical creatures. There are centaurs, and there are fawns, and even unicorns. There are also talking animals and human soldiers and 2 children, Jill Pole and Eustace Scrub, who were transported from London, somehow finding themselves in Narnia and in the midst of the battle. So here's this battle between good and evil, between those who follow Aslan and those who do not. And on the battlefield, C.S. Lewis puts a stable. It's a dirty old building with a thatched roof, no bigger than 12 feet by 6 feet. And before the fighting began, that stable was standing there, and it has served as a place of deception and manipulation. It's a place of fear. For those who gather around have seen people go through the door of the stable and come out terrified. They've seen people enter the door of the stable and come out just their body, their dead body. They've seen people go into the stable and never come back again. That stable door is a source of terror that they are all trying to avoid. In the midst of all the chaos of the battle is a group of dwarfs, Narnian dwarfs, and they don't fight for either side. They just shoot arrows at will and whoever gets in the way. They don't care for right or wrong. They only care for themselves and repeatedly keep saying the dwarfs are for the dwarfs. They wreak havoc without purpose. They stand nothing for nothing except their own selfish gain. So eventually, the the enemies of Narnia get the upper hand, and they begin to grab those who are in the battle, but instead of killing them, they carry them to the door of the stable and throw them in. And this is what happens to the dwarfs. The soldiers are tired of their interference, and they manage to surround them, and the whole lot of them gets dragged and carried, kicking and screaming, and thrown into the door of the stable. And then those enemies turn around and find a small group of those on Aslan's side, including King Tyrion and our children Jill and Eustace, and they too are thrown through the stable door. But they're surprised at what they find. Instead of a dark and smelly stable, Jill and Eustace and King Tyrion and so many others find themselves on fresh green grass with blue sky above and a land that goes on forever. There are no walls. There is no roof, just a door standing alone in the most beautiful countryside that they have ever seen. They went through the door expecting to find death, and instead they find life. And Aslan is there, welcoming them into his own country and revealing to them that Narnia is coming to a close. They learn that Narnia, a beautiful and beloved land, was only meant to be temporary, that it is a mere shadow of the real land in which they are destined to go. And as Narnia diminishes, as its shadows become longer, anyone who wishes can follow Aslan into a better, fuller land and life. They can, like the chapter title says, say farewell to Shadowlands. Each person that enters the stable has an opportunity to come face to face with Aslan, and most of them see on his face compassion and welcome, and they accept the invitation to move on into Aslan's country. But not the dwarfs. The dwarfs unwillingly enter the stable, and when they arrive, they see nothing but what they expected. They believe they're in the stable. They sit huddled together, refusing to look up and around and see that there are more than dark walls and a shaded roof above them. Then Aslan lays a feast before them, and they complain about the dry straw that they've been given and the dirty water they've been asked to drink. Their pride and their fear that they'll be taken in or taken advantage of cast a shadow so deep that they cannot see the light and the goodness that is all around them or hear the invitation to join Aslan. Turns out the dwarfs have lived in the Shadowlands for so long that they cannot see or believe that life could be any other way. So they sit there, huddled together, and are left behind as the others begin to run and to run and to run into Aslan's country, never growing weary, running in wonder and delight away from Shadowlands. This allegory that Lewis has written speaks to a larger reality. He's trying to paint a picture of something that is real, the reality of resurrection and life, the same story that we speak of at Easter and throughout the year. This is the crux of what we believe as Christians. It's the story of Easter that we tell today that begins in John 20, as Wendell read the first part of the chapter. We read about Mary Magdalene and how she had witnessed Jesus' crucifixion and death, how she waited until Sunday to go to the tomb to tend to his body. But when she gets there, Mary sees that the stone has been rolled away from the tomb, so she hightails it back to get the other disciples and to tell them the tomb is open, the door is wide open, and she comes back again with Peter and John, who verify what she said, and then they run back to the others, leaving her all alone. And in verse 11, John writes, "Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying, and as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white, seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. And they asked her, 'Woman, why are you crying?' 'They have taken my Lord away,' Mary said. 'I don't know where they have put him.' At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize it was Jesus. Mary leans over and looks through the door of the tomb, expecting to find death. But instead, there is no body. So she turns around to find it somewhere else and runs right into Jesus, but she doesn't know that it's him. How can that be? This is one of Jesus' closest friends. She has spent time with him for so long, and yet when he's standing right in front of her, she doesn't recognize him. One wonders, what is it that prevented her from seeing and knowing Jesus when he was right there? I think probably sorrow. Cast a shadow that caused her to not see. Fatigue. Her broken heart. These kept her from looking up to see Jesus when he was right in front of her. She had lived in the Shadowlands for so long. She thought that death was the end. There was no reason to think that Jesus would be there real and alive, and so she assumed he was someone else, but then he spoke to her. In verse 15, Jesus asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" And thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've put him, and I will get him." So first she looks right at Jesus and doesn't recognize him, and then he speaks to her, and even though she knows his voice, she has spent countless hours listening to him teach, she can't hear. She cannot recognize his voice. She has spent too long listening to others tell her what can and cannot be. She cannot think outside the box. She can't even remember that he told her this was what was going to happen. "I'm going to die, and then I'm going to be back." And so Jesus speaks to her again. Jesus said to her, "Mary." And she turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. And it's the sound of Jesus saying her name, like he has done so many times. Saying her name like no one else, that finally grabs her attention. And suddenly all the things that seemed impossible are possible. And it is Jesus right in front of her. Everything has changed. Life beat death. And she now needs to let everyone else know. I can't imagine how fast she ran back to the others wherever they were. It says, Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them he had said these things to her. She runs back to tell them what she had seen, and the same thing happens again, just like those who enter the door of the stable. Some of them see and believe immediately. They are able to set aside what they thought could never happen and trust her words and to trust Jesus. But some of them, they don't believe at all. Once again, something has gotten in the way. They want to see for themselves. One of them even says, "I'm going to need to touch Jesus myself in order to believe." He's trapped in a fear of being wrong, being fooled, being taken in to be able and not unable to see what is real. So here are these two stories, a parable written for children and the true narrative about Jesus' resurrection, and they show us something about ourselves and our world. They remind us that one day we're going to pass through the door called death. But what we will find there is that whatever we've been told, that death is the end of everything, that death is nothing, that death has the final word, we'll find that's wrong. What we'll find is the thing that we dread the most is really a door into a better and more real life. We'll find through that door Jesus there to meet us face to face with an invitation. An invitation to be free from the shadows of sin and death, to be free from sadness and struggle and suffering and anger and shame. Standing there with an invitation to move on and to move in and to bid farewell to the Shadowlands. And the only thing we need to do is to say yes. This is the promise of Easter. This is the promise of a resurrection. This is the promise of heaven, that there is life after death, and that the door is no longer a place of fear, but a passage into a perfect and whole forever. And yet life with Jesus is not just a hope for some far distant future, that there's a story. This story affects our lives in the here and now. Jesus also meets us in the meantime, inviting us to a different kind of life, where death and resurrection give us hope for the future, but also hope for life here in the Shadowlands, where we know all too well that sometimes it's hard to see. If you're a Narnian dwarf, And you're given the opportunity to be free from the shadows, but it's hard to see past your pride and your arrogance and years of fending for yourself or the fear of being made foolish. So those dwarfs just sit there staring into the shadows when all they have to do is look up into the face of Aslan to see the light. It's hard for dwarfs to see. It's hard for the first followers of Jesus to see. There was Mary bowed down in sorrow and grief who could not immediately see what was right in front of her. She had to look up and to listen in order to recognize Jesus. And it's difficult sometimes for us to see. We live in this world where there are shadows that obscure, blocking the light of Christ, overshadowing the kingdom of God at work, making it hard to see and believe. And so the question for all of us is there something that is keeping me from seeing Jesus? Is there something that has kept you from seeing Jesus for the first time? Or is there something that has caused you to lose sight of what you first believed, what seemed so clear before? There are things that obscure our sight, our own sin, pride, anger, resentment, the fear of being taken in or looking foolish. Sometimes our sight is obscured by a need to have every single question answered so that we cannot look forward in faith. Sorrow and pain and loneliness obscure our sight, and shame. Shame for something you've done or something that's been done to you. Those are the kinds of things that cast shadows and cause our vision to fade. These are the kind of shadows that obscure the light. Obscure the light of the one who says to us, I love you. I died for you. I forgive you. I have a new life for you. So whatever it takes, look for that light. Because it's just as real here in the Shadowlands, maybe peeking around corners, maybe little glimpses or beams here and there, but it's just as real as it is there as the day that we will see Jesus face to face. Look for the light, look up, peer past the darkness if you must, squint, put on your glasses, cover the shadows, move out of shadows, suspend your judgment, and believe that it's possible that there's life after death and there's life here. Better than the life that we would have. With whatever you can see, believe and say yes. And then we spend the rest of our lives finding out what that means, discovering that beyond the door is far better. It's a far better life, unimaginably so than what we could have. But life here is also radically different. Life with Jesus means the presence of Jesus Christ in your life. He says, I'm with you always. Life with Jesus means having peace that doesn't make any sense. Life in Jesus means joy instead of fear, and purpose and meaning and freedom and hope and love without limits. And it means that one day we will say farewell to the Shadowlands for good. I ask that you would join me in prayer. I will leave some spaces of silence. You can say whatever you want to God in that space, or just wait for God to speak to you. Would you join me? Lord, I'm so grateful today for stories, for made-up stories that point to you, for real-life stories of the people that knew you, Jesus, when you were here, who saw you live, who heard you teach, who felt your healing, who knew they were loved, who saw you die and then saw you come back and promise that that is the truth for us too. Lord, today we're grateful for the places in which we see life and we lift them to you silently. We have heard, Lord, that one day we will pass through that door that seems so dreadful, but find that there is actually life beyond. And we look forward to that day and trust that you will meet us, and we will look into your face and say yes. But in this time, Lord, as we live in the Shadowlands, there are things that obscure our vision. So, Lord, help us to lose those things. Clear our vision and make us able to see. We silently tell you what it is that we want or need to see. And with whatever sight we have, Lord, you offer an invitation to follow you into life. And we silently whisper when our hearts are ready, yes. So, Lord, continue to give us eyes to see, ears to hear, minds to believe, hearts to receive, the courage to say yes and to follow you through the shadowlands into new life. Thank you for your love for us. Amen.